Hi, and welcome to Coffee with Claire. Have you heard the term servant leadership before? I hadn't, but I realized once I learned what it was that I had been embodying it for years. What servant leadership is all about is really being more of a mentor than a boss. It's putting people before paperwork and making friends before you actually do business with people. And it's also about being patient and being willing to watch and see how people are learning from you. And if they're not learning exactly the way you wanted them to, it's your job to tweak your delivery system for them to be able to understand it even better. So there's a lot of improv that goes into servant leadership. There's listen, watch, and concentrate. It's my job to listen to you and make sure that I'm fully present for the mentoring moment. And it's also about my job is to make you look brilliant. In servant leadership, there's no ego involved in the leadership process. It's all about the other person. And what happens is when you put them before you, the reciprocal occurs as well, and they start putting you before them. And when you have that kind of synergy, when you have that kind of really strong relationship, you build a lot of trust, you build a lot of loyalty, and people are much more comfortable coming to you if there's a situation that has to be addressed. So my challenge for you this week is to think about servant leadership. Are you embodying servant leadership? If you are, share it with us at coffeewithclaire.tv on our Cool Beans blog site. And if you're not, then just think about how you could tweak things a little bit and show up as a servant leader. As you know, every week we have entrepreneurs, people who give back to the community, and people who like to have fun. And my guest this week is Billy Johnson. And Billy Johnson is the director of the Professional Leadership Program, which is housed in the College of Business up at the University of North Texas. So welcome, Billy.
Thank you, Claire. Good to be here.
So before you came to the before we get into the Professional Leadership Program and all of that, I know that you have a really strong background in HR and being at Deloitte and everything. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about what you did before you came here?
Well, thanks. I'll compress that. Since we're having fun, I'll kind of compress this because as an older guy, there's a lot of history. But in short, I spent about 30-plus years corporately in combination with corporate experiences and actually now with the 4 years at UNT, almost 10 years higher education. So if I kind of capsulize a career, I first started out in higher ed actually as an undergrad student recruiting students. Went to school at Cal State University Northridge, and that's how I first started, kind of been doing talent management all my life. And then I moved to University of Texas in Austin, Student Services, Dean of Students area, and I was recruited corporately, and the joke was coming over to the dark side. And so I went to work for AT&T, had a 10-year career track there, basically doing a lot of P&L, as we call it then, profit and loss. So I was a business person, if you will, in traditional sense. But all along, I continued to work on talent management and development. That culminated in my then leaving and going over to a client, which was Arco Oil and Gas, that had an Arco Oil and Gas headquartered here. But Los Angeles was the corporate location. So at that time, I spent basically 12 years with Arco. That culminated with us doing a joint venture with Southern Company in Atlanta. And the Atlanta experience was interesting because it was the Enron days, and that's kind of history now. We built an energy trading company. It was a very exciting time. Did an IPO. I got the benefit of doing two initial public offerings. And at that time, as that blew up, because literally that's what happened with it, they owed us a lot of money, so we had to reorganize, eventually sell the company. I went to work for Deloitte here in Dallas. And so approximately almost a 10-year run, if you will, with Deloitte. It was an exciting time because I had never worked in a private setting, if you will. I always worked in public companies. Mm-hmm. And so the joke with my friends was I put on my lab coat, I go in every day and fire up the Bunsen burners. So for the baby boomers, we had no idea what those were, but they were tubes in the lab. And so every day I went in and I kind of did things in different talent management space, recruiting, local, and national jobs. So it was a fun time. Finished with the Deloitte University project, and then you and I met at one point in time as mentors with the Professional Leadership Program, and that led to the opportunity I have now at UNT.
So Billy and I have been mentors at the University of North Texas in the Professional Leadership Program for about 9 years now. And I wanted him to come and let you guys know about the Professional Leadership Program because we are at this point being nationally recognized as a really strong mentoring program. So if you could give everybody a little bit of the history of it and you know, we can kind of talk about how we get the students and that kind of thing.
Yeah, thanks, Claire. So a couple of things. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. Our delivery model is designed around, I'm the director of the program. I have a colleague, Rachel Cleveland, assistant director, and the person who keeps the trains running and deals with foot traffic, Natalie Bernard. So the three of us are kind of that leadership, if you will, but more importantly around this leadership model for this mentoring program. And this year we have 130 students. It's the mentors themselves from corporate. So let me kind of characterize that and unpack it a bit. The program's in its 22nd year. So it's been a very, very long time. This particular model, though, I'd say started to take shape 10 or 12 years ago under my predecessor, a lady named Renee Bear. And Renee started working with corporate sponsors and partners to bring in this mentoring opportunity. What we've been able to do, and you've been part of that and seen that, is take it, as people say, to the next level. Mm-hmm. So what you have, if you look at this program today and its profile, you have 130 students that were admitted this year. About half of those students were business, and the unique difference now is half were non-business majors. So that's one of the unique things in terms of having an on-campus program with students that are from these different diverse backgrounds, both academically, culturally. This year, about 30% of those students are from global areas.
Right.
And so it's very unique. Now, the most unique feature, and we've, as you mentioned, nationally been going, doing conferences and presenting on it, is the fact that it's this one-on-one mentorship. Mm-hmm. For 1 year, each student has a mentor in their respective area of field of study.
And the one-on-one, as Billy mentioned, all the mentors are volunteers. And we look for executives in the DFW area, and we match them up with a student, and they actually work together for an entire year. The students go to networking events with their mentors. They get to go to board meetings. They really get to see what it looks like to be a part of business before they're actually in business. And tagline used to be backpack to briefcase. Right. Now it's kind of changed, but I think it illustrates kind of where we are.
Yeah, the tag on now is leadership edge. And I think everything evolves. And I think one of the things that impacted us with the fast change of technology, the students are literally probably smarter from an academic sense, but there's still that need for what my grandmother should call the common sense. So we try to impart that. I think the other thing fundamental to our model was the servant leadership model. Mm-hmm. So I always refer to the fact we're trying to connect the students' heads and their hearts. They're already very bright academically. They got strong grade point averages. They have a lot of focus and drive. But it's a matter of understanding if I want to be a finance person, I want to go into banking. And I was just speaking with someone before I came in about give as you go. Mm-hmm. So as a student, you can provide impact in terms of community involvement on campus or off campus. And then what we do in this leadership model is try to develop the skill set so that if you're going into the workplace or whether you're going into your own business, because a lot of our students have a focus in being entrepreneurs or not-for-profit, mm-hmm. you're going to need these skills, often referred to as soft skills. You're going to need those skills to be successful in whatever you're going to do. So that's kind of the genesis of it. But again, underpinning that is this servant leadership model.
And the soft skills really are the hard skills, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah, I was just pushed back on HR. They talk about the soft skills. They're not so soft. If they were, I'd say everybody has those.
Right.
I think they're as tangible, as important, and they're very leveraging. They create what I call a competitive advantage. If I take any student, let's say if they're majoring in and want to focus in the entrepreneur space, they want to open up a design business, they're going to need to be able to present a proposal to someone to get funding. They're going to need to be able to build a team and hire a team and keep the team together. And so it doesn't matter what your background is, you're going to need certain skills. And we talk about these three P's, professionalism, poise, and present. You will need those in whatever you're going to do. And so there's a transfer of skills. The beauty of PLP, and we all wish we had this, many of us when we were undergrads, is I get an opportunity to come into kind of this laboratory every Wednesday night in our class time, and I get to engage with students that are from various places globally. And that, as my business speak would say, they're cross-functional. So if I'm a finance major, I'm working with someone who's in marketing, I'm working with someone who possibly wants to be a lawyer, again, a design person, STEM. We've got a resurgence, I'd say, in students interested from the STEM standpoint who want to be doctors or engineers in various areas. They get to come together. And we have a business case that you're familiar with that McKinsey did for us a couple of years ago, so that's in its fourth year. And each semester, they get to work together in teams and look at this business case. So again, cross-functional work, you get to look at conflict negotiations, resolution skills, communication skills, which are all the things we hear employers wanting.
Absolutely.
And grad school's the same thing.
So kind of walk the audience through how the students are chosen and then what the student's commitment is throughout the year.
Yeah, it's the recruiting and selection process is sort of tiered, I guess I describe it. One of the things you do, and I get kidded a lot by this, is we really have to recruit 12 months a year, if you will. You're never not recruiting. So the students who come in, for example, this year, one of the first things we do at kickoff is tell them to share their experience about PLP with their peers. Talk to them about your weekly experience. Talk about your mentor experience. And talk about all of it. You know, sometimes there's a challenge to first get started with a new mentor, new mentee. Mm-hmm. So talk about that fact, because over time it's going to be successful. You can share with them, I don't know my mentor well yet, but he or she, we're going to be meeting. And then in 3 months you can say, wow, we've really bonded. I've got these two or three professional goals and personal goals. We're working on that. So recruiting starts with word of mouth. We use all the social media avenues that normally you'd expect to use for millennial generation. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, we actually have a timeline that will start coming up in this January where we'll be pretty high impact recruiting on the campus, in classrooms, faculty allow us to come in and talk, through various student organizations, fraternities, sororities, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So we use every medium possible in terms of recruiting students. The typical student we're going to yield, and we have a pretty high pipeline. So if you think of it, last year, for example, to yield 130, we had about 250 qualified applicants out of about 400 applications that went out. And then we have a screening process that's typically an all-day, typical review process in terms of interview. Go through certain questions. It's a pairing of a mentor and a student, and that's all part of that selection process. So you go back, you identify kind of your market, that's anyone on that campus now because it's not business only, and then we start to look at coming down who's qualified, who's interested, who goes through the screening process, and we select those students in. We do have a limitation in terms of what we can deliver. 130 is the highest number we've ever had. Mm-hmm. And so there's a limitation on classroom space, also with quality mentor experiences. Every student has a mentor because we keep that pipeline full. So we make sure we don't overcommit, if you will, so that we don't underdeliver. We want to keep that model tack and what I call structural integrity. We want this to be a quality experience for any student who comes in that program.
And, you know, as the mentors come through the program, there's a selection process for them as well.
There is. That one is, it's like sausage making people describe. So the reason I call it that is because you may refer someone we know very, very well that you've met and you know, and that person's qualified and we sit down and meet. There could be someone else that I randomly meet or you in a grocery store and we talk about this program. That's where the sausage is like, yeah, why don't you talk about it? Send some information. We sit down and that may or may not be a fit or a match. Then there are others that year over year, because the retention rate's been very high and 60-70% returning, they refer us. So referral's number one. But there are the random, if you will. We're just meeting people and asking them if they know about the program, do they know about the university, do they know about the College of Business. And that's kind of a, you know, kind of a sloppy engineering exercise. And it yields a certain percentage of people. For example, a couple of years ago, we were looking for we needed some physicians or people in the medical field. Mm-hmm. And actually what happened was we relied upon our University of North Texas Health Science Center, went in and picked up a couple of students who helped us mentor students who were pre-med students. We didn't have a vision around that. We just knew we needed to find someone in that space, and that was difficult because any doctor who's practicing his or her, their schedules are demanding. They don't have the time. So that's one of those kind of reverse engineering, kind of figured out a way of making that happen. So that's kind of how I described the process. And then we do the screen. We sit down. They do an application. Mm-hmm. There's a due diligence process that's required. And Rachel and I will spend usually one-on-one time with anyone completely new. If they're referred, it may be a phone call. We can do the LinkedIn check. We can do a lot of other things, again, the application process.
When you also include the board members and kind of helping with some of that as well.
Yeah, board's critical to us because the board, I had a boss once describe to me that if you're going to be successful in business, you need to be able to see around corners. That's what our board does for us. The board gives us that insight on what's current, what's in demand competitively in a lot of spaces, and then what's coming. So where they help us is they both do the referrals. They help in the interview process, both the students as well as the vetting, if you will, of potential mentors. And then they're very involved in a kind of a cluster model. So, for example, with 130 students and a one-on-one mentor, that means there's 130 mentors out there. The board design is they take that group and divide it into, let's say, 10 or 12 per board member, and then they coach, counsel, help with the onboarding throughout the year for the mentors. And we try to make sure the assignments around these clusters is a mix of experienced mentors and then mentors are new so that I can get the benefit of learning lessons from you, also from my board leader. So their value add is phenomenal for us.
Well, it's a really unique program that I've been so proud to be a part of. You know, the students make a commitment of being in the class every Wednesday. They get no credit for this. They get no academic credit. But the value that they see is, what would you, if you were going to?
Yeah, the number one thing they give us, and that's kind of the legacy, it gets back to this mentor. When we're interviewing the students, we'll ask, and it's probably 90% of responses on why did you want to compete, participate, join PLP, as we call it on campus, it's always the mentor, the mentorship. And it's not just because there's an assumption that if I get this mentor, he or she can help me get a job necessarily.
Right.
It's going to help me be better in terms of a skill set, knowledge, information. You know, we get a variety. You know, you've had someone who said, I want to be more outgoing. Well, then let's give you clarity to help you become more outgoing. Because
I
need that. That's right. You need that in my skill set. So we try to do, it's a little bit of an art form when Rachel and I are doing this mentor matching, and the students know that, to make that as precise as we can on what you're going to need and then add a little bit more. So it's very, very important to be intentional around what we do.
And the classes that they attend are led by subject matter experts from all over the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And they are also not compensated, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're largely, you know, it's pro bono for mm-hmm. the most part. I mean, what makes this engine, which is amazing as well, makes it run. So the subject matter experts, and we have course curriculum that we've involved and developed, I should say, over the years. And so, for example, if someone's going to come in and speak to negotiating skills, we've got a course outline. It's very traditional, standard kind of curriculum approach that you'd see in any college classroom. We designed it with that intent. Yet the speaker comes in and he or she may adapt some on their skill set. So for example, in that topic of negotiation skills, we have a person who comes in, Jim Shields, and Jim speaks to the broader sense of negotiating around your time and your talent, basically. Not just the normal thought for college students, I'm negotiating for a salary.
Yeah.
Or I'm negotiating with a bank to get a loan to start my business. Everything you do in life on his premise is negotiation. So that application is there. The same thing when you talk about mm-hmm. conflict resolution. You know, this year we had one of our mentors come in, and Mo came in and talked around more and more around conflict resolution, because that's a skill set that's missing, particularly as a parent of millennials. We did a lot, I think, as parents, some call helicopter parents, that limited our students from developing good one-on-one skill sets in handling conflict. And so what you want to do is be able to equip someone to understand, in a group setting, it's going to be some conflict if it's a matter of setting the goal, the objective, but how do you work through it? It's all around the dialogue and the conversation. And then we have, for example, the art of conversation. Because, again, students get critiqued mm-hmm. a lot about their 140 character limitations. Some of that's true for some students, but the broader group of students are very keen on wanting to communicate effectively, not necessarily on how to do it. So we address those things as well. And so all that curriculum is done by some of the best in this market.
So the skill sets that they learn are really above and beyond what they might learn in a traditional classroom setting.
Yeah, it's the term they use in academia is co-curricular. So you have the curriculum, which is standard traditional curriculum, and ours being co-curricular. And definitely, so for example, if I am an engineering student, we have one of the biggest classes this year. So an engineering student's not going to get any courses on communication, engagement, team building. So we provide that skill set and that knowledge to them. It complements what's going on in the classroom. Because for the most part, generally speaking, that's a technical approach being taken in the classroom, mm-hmm. tech and theory. Ours is going to be taking, if you will, the theory, but then adding the practical application, again, because of these best-in-class individuals from this market that brings that in. I mean, one of the more powerful classes and takes the longest on delivery, it's an hour and a half, most of our class hour, is emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And that class done by the Hennessy's is impactful because being self-aware is the most critical thing any of us can have. And some of
Absolutely.
Us are on a long journey to get there.
It'd take forever.
But that's a very, very important thing for a student to understand how he or she impacts people, interacts, engage others, understand things about themselves, again, so they can be a high-impact player in whatever it is they're doing.
Right. So the mentors learn as much from the students as the students learn from the mentors. I mean, I hear stories all the time of, wow, well, they're keeping me relevant,
right.
you know, or I had no idea that this culture that my mentee is from had this kind of challenge or this type of communication that I needed to approach. So I think that there's a real benefit on both sides, you know, of the equation.
Yeah, I learned a lot, and I know you could say the same from the mentors. I had mentors from various places. When I call a traditional student who went to some high school in Denton or Dallas, one of the more illustrative cases for me was I had two students from China. They're both accounting majors. First of all, not an accounting major, although I worked at Deloitte and had a responsibility for talent inside of accounting. I'm not your accounting person. But what I learned, for example, just because I've never been to China, I've done some study, but the distinctive and unique differences about this one person who was from the northern part of China, province there, if you will, and different cultural dynamics, even some language differences, and southern, cultural differences, economic differences, both were accounting majors. Ironically, both were 4.0s in accounting, but that is the only similarity they had in that regards. So I learned a lot about a variety of, you know, foods and again, languages, how they interact with families. There were some commonalities around values, but at the same time, a lot of differences. So you do get a lot out of it. It's no question for you. We tell every student and every mentor, you get as much as you put in,
right,
in terms of return and more. And you do get to stay relevant. Again, as a baby boomer, you kind of get a little cool factor, but at least you know what's going on. They don't think you're cool, but you do get the benefit of staying current and, you know, actually staying relevant so that you can take whatever knowledge and wisdom you have and impart that to the students.
And, you know, the thing I think my favorite is contrasting first semester versus second semester, especially in the networking event. At the first networking event, everyone just kind of gets off the bus and they go straight for the food. Or we help them not to do that, but, you know, they still do it because they're hungry. And then, you know, sometimes they have their business cards in their pockets and things like that. And sometimes they haven't remembered their business cards. And then the second one.
Yeah, it's like they turn loose.
You know, night and day.
You get this, I guess it's they've gone through boot camp, if you will. Now they're officers. By way of example. So, yeah, they're so different. You'll see the strategies in that first semester of, well, let's go over and meet her, but I'm kind of scared. Let's go together.
Yeah, because we're adults, you know, so we're scary.
Second semester, I got to go over here and talk to Claire. I got to go talk to Rex. I got to go talk to Ray White. He's a marketing guy, so I got to see him, and I got to give him my card. So very different.
Yeah, it's amazing the transformation that we see in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, it's quick. You get a lot. That's one of the benefits you get is the students, and you know, the school year is nine and a half months. But, you know, with your breaks and times, it's six and a half,
that's
7
short.
Months of compressed time.
Yeah.
And you see so much growth. You see, again, the students who are introverts, if you will, learn how to be an extrovert for their right moment in time. You see those students who are a little bit overconfident when they come in the program, mm-hmm. get settled and stable and realize, I don't know everything, I'm not ready to be CEO. You see the balancing act that happens in the interpersonal development.
So now that we've had this program, everybody's going to be totally excited about PLP, so you're going to have to tell them how to get involved and how they can help.
Okay, so the easy answer is this. So we're a college of business-based program. So on our College of Business website, you can go to that website at UNT and click on the PLP link. That'll bring you up to our page. That shows everything we've talked about in other details. It'll show our board. That'll show our mission and our purpose. Application process for students, application process for mentors. The other thing, too, is to go ahead and you can give us a call. All of our information is there, and we can sit down with anyone. We love to do that. Matter of fact, a lot of Fridays, what Rachel and I both spend time doing is talking to potential corporate sponsors, partners, and mentors. So we're very willing to do that, to put our time into this. So the easy way is just go to the website, click on PLP, and all the information will be available to you.
In this series, we'll be learning about laughter yoga and the benefits of deep belly laughter that simulates the deep breathing when practicing yoga. It was developed in 1995 by Dr. Madan Kataria, a medical doctor in Dubai, India. Dr. Kataria discovered many modern scientific studies that described at length the proven benefits of laughter on the human mind and body. Ha, ha, ha. Ho. What laughter yoga is, it's all about bringing laughter to your body to help you breathe like yoga poses do. And so deep breathing has a lot of benefits, all right? Number one, of course, it gives us more oxygen in all of our cells. Number two, it releases endorphins. Does everyone know what endorphins are? What are endorphins? They make you feel good. And there's also a lot of psychological benefits of laughter yoga because it allows you to release any kind of stress, which is really helpful in our really busy lifestyles. As you know, everybody's got a million and one things going on. And so it's kind of nice just to get out of your head and into your heart. Laughter yoga is a unique concept where anyone can laugh for no reason without relying on humor, jokes, or comedy.
Deep breath in and out.
The concept of laughter yoga is based on scientific fact that the body cannot differentiate between fake and real laughter if done with willingness. One gets the same psychological and physiological benefits. The reason we call it laughter yoga is because it combines laughter exercises with yoga breathing. This brings more oxygen to the body and the brain, which makes you feel more energized and healthy. We initiate laughter as an exercise in a group, but with eye contact and childlike playfulness, it soon turns into real, contagious laughter. So as you know, we are looking at laughter yoga as a way to increase our health benefits. And so today we have Billy Johnson to help me demonstrate one of our laughter yoga techniques. So as a reminder, laughter yoga is breathing from our diaphragm. And the reason it's called laughter yoga, it's because we are not doing downward dog or anything like that, but it's the deep breathing that you get from yoga. And there's science that proves that laughter increases endorphin levels, it helps with your immunity system, and 1 minute of laughter yoga is the same as 10 minutes on an exercise bike as far as the endorphin release goes. So there really is a lot of great things around this. So today we are going to demonstrate flu shot laughter yoga. It's a cold and flu season, as we know, and so we're going to do a little bit of a pantomime, and then when we get the needle stuck in our arm, instead of going, ah, that hurts, we're going to laugh hysterically, and we're going to make eye contact when we do that, because when you make eye contact when you are laughing, the mirror neurons makes that experience even bigger, okay? All right, so if you were going to, if I was going to give you a shot, what would it look like, and you're going to give me one, so we'll give each other our shot. So, okay, so let's pick up our syringe, okay, and then we're going to have to, like, push on the little thing there, right? Yeah, oh, look at him, he's got all primed and everything.
Can't do this.
Okay, and so we're going to give each other a shot, and remember, we're going to make eye contact, and then when it penetrates our skin, instead of hurting, it's going to make us laugh hysterically. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. 1, 2, 3. And there you have it, Billy Johnson, laughter yoga. Thank you.
Namaste.
So my first question is, we're all so busy. How do you balance fun with responsibility at work?
I haven't always been really good at that, but what I try and do is keep it light at the office. Try and tell jokes, try and encourage people to tell jokes, try and throw them off a little bit just to kind of keep them out of their comfort zone. Not in a cynical way, but in a way just to kind of keep it light, because insurance is a really, dreary business, so it's fun to keep it light at work.
So what are some of the fun things or aspects about owning your own business?
Oh, it's all on you. You look in the mirror, and if it works, it's because of what you did, and if it doesn't work, it's because of what you did. I'm the marketing department, I'm sales, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it's my fault. So I love that. I absolutely love that challenge.
How do you encourage others in their life to have fun?
I think you have to surround yourself with people that are going through similar things to what you are, so that you can realize that the highs shouldn't always be as high as you sometimes make them, and the lows shouldn't be as low as you try and make them sometimes. And so you have to try and keep a balance. You have to keep people around you that can keep you grounded and keep you focused.
What advice could you give someone that might be struggling right now as to how to keep it fun?
Find something you enjoy to do. Work out. Exercise is a big piece of it, especially if you do cardio workouts. That's huge. Just make it a point to go out. My wife and I go out to dinner every Wednesday night. We go out on weekends, and that's huge. That's just a nice icebreaker during the week. At 2 times out a week, it's wonderful.
So tell us a little bit about your business.
So I have an insurance agency, PNC Insurance, and everybody kind of rolls their eyes when they hear that. And the reality is, I help people who don't have the time to get insurance problems fixed. One phone call us, we got it. The next time we talk, it's taken care of. And that's a big differentiator in the marketplace.
So if you had a happy dance or a happy stance, what would that look like?
Remember Snoopy from Peanuts? Remember where he's just bouncing off the wall? That would be me, absolutely.
Awesome. So your homework for this week is to think about servant leadership. How can you embody servant leadership? Or if it makes it a little easier, think about how you can mentor someone rather than boss someone. Let us know how that shift in thinking works for you on our Cool Beans site at coffeewithclaire.tv. And remember, follow the fun. See you next time.